This is Tradio Media, and I'm Father Roderick, and it is a cold day in Amersfoort, Netherlands. But I'm sitting in a warm studio behind a microphone. From Star Wars to the sacraments of technology to theology, this show features the cool and the classical, the past and the future, and the trends and the tradition. So wherever you are and whatever you're doing, welcome to my show. And this show, as always, is brought to you free of any advertisement, which I think is something that we should cherish, because lots of shows nowadays have tons of advertisements that break up your listening routine, and then you have to fast forward, and it's... But thanks to my patrons, I can bring you these shows without ads, because they help me finance all this work. So if you want to join them, go over to patreon.com/FatherRoderick. And if you become a patron, then you'll get access to the after show, which is a weekly recording of a conversation that follows this one. And now it's time for the news.
Do you know what's going on?
This is what's happening in your world.
Face it, Catholics rule. We got Boston, South America, the good part of Ireland, and we're making serious inroads in Mozambique, baby.
You've taken your first step into a larger world.
Well, it is a summer holiday here in the Netherlands for a lot of people. But not for me and not for us here at Tridio. We are going ahead at full steam to prepare the shows for the second part of the year. We've been commissioned, I think, 12 episodes, 11 or 12 television episodes. And we want to make sure that we film a lot of that stuff before the start of the TV season. So that means that we are constantly... figuring out how to schedule certain appointments. I'll talk a little bit more about that later on in the after show for the patrons. It's exciting. It's sometimes extremely exhausting because, well, you're working with other people and you cannot always control the weather. You can't control when people are available. Sometimes you plan something in advance and then everything... nothing goes according to plan. And sometimes there are just days that nothing seems to work, or you have tech problems, but it's kind of part of the job. And what I try to do, and which is very hard, is to stay calm and to not get stressed. But there are days that the old Father Roderick comes back. And yesterday morning, I was like really down and depressed, and just I had the feeling that nothing went the way I wanted it to go. Today I'm fine. So I just know that sometimes I have these somber days and I'll just have to stay put and go to bed early and wait for things to go over. And usually the dark clouds disappear after a day. I bet I'm not the only one who has days like that. So sometimes you wake up and then... it's around 11 o'clock and you still haven't done anything, and you think, I should have stayed in bed. I should have just slept the entire day and reboot, like you reboot your computer, and then things work again. Anyway, with that, I think it is time for a visit to the world of movies and TV shows.
How do you not like movies?
They're predictable. Like, the guy gets the girl and that kid sees dead people and Darth Vader is Luke's father.
Not liking movies is like not liking puppies.
They're fine. I just get bored and never make it to the end.
You know, you need a movie education. You need a moviecation. I'm going to give it to you.
So I want to talk about a number of movies. And of course, this week in the United States, finally, you get to see the new installment in the Jurassic Park series, Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, a movie that we in Europe were able to see weeks ago, and I gave you my initial spoiler-free review. And even though I love Jurassic Park and just anything with dinosaurs kind of awakens the 8-year-old Father Roderick, who loved his plastic dinosaurs, even though I'm a big fan of the franchise, the movie was a disappointment, and I was, I think, pretty negative about it. Because I felt that they did nothing new. It was just a rehash of everything we've seen before. And in a way, it's like Transformers with dinosaurs. You know, the first Transformers movie, I loved it because it was new. It looked amazing. I'd never seen something like that before. And then the second one was like, it's a bit kind of dull, and the jokes are not really funny, and it is at times kind of sexist, and the humor is immature, and then the third Transformers came out, and that movie was even twice as long, and it was like, oh, okay, more robots that fight each other, and then the fourth one came out, and even more robots that fight the robots that fought the robots, and it just got really to the point that finally they decided not to make any new Transformers movies. Instead, they will do a spin-off. They'll do a Bumblebee movie about the yellow Transformer. I apologize to the Transformers fans in the audience. I'm a bit too old for the Transformers. They were not part of my childhood. And I guess the Bumblebee character was the funniest Transformer, the most human one, you could say. So perhaps that will still work. But I think they have to be very careful with the Jurassic Park franchise, that it won't go the same way as the Transformers, because you can't just repeat what we've already seen. At one point, people are going to move over to something else. It's kind of the same criticism that that the Lucasfilm and Disney got about Star Wars. It's like, stop doing remakes of the original movies. The Force Awakens was exactly like A New Hope. It's just a rehash. Hans, why do we need to see a movie about Han Solo? We already know how it ends. We know his backstory, and well, it's just not compelling enough. It's not new enough. Now, of course, I like any Star Wars, and I'd watch any Star Wars, no matter if it's a complete rehash of everything we've seen before. It's kind of part of also of the cyclical nature of the storytelling in Star Wars. But even there, I would encourage them to try out something new, to bring the Force to other parts of the galaxy where we've never been and where we don't know what's going to happen. And I think with Jurassic World, I hope they can do the same. There's going to be a third movie. It's going to come out, and hopefully it'll take some of the more interesting story threads that are really not getting much airtime in this movie and turn it into something that is a lot more exciting than the second movie or the second Jurassic World movie. But anyway, go see it for yourself if you want to. If you're not certain, I would not recommend this, probably, unless you've got time to spare and money to spare, then yeah, by all means. It's a popcorn movie, but don't expect something that is better than what you've seen before. Expect something that is similar and in some ways also a bit inferior to some of the other movies. Speaking of Solo, we finally get to know a little bit more about why that movie didn't do well at the box office. It's not just because of the fans. And there's been a lot of discussion about the toxic nature among certain fans, because this is also the vocal minority that loves to destroy online everything they hate about Kathleen Kennedy and about the way Disney is going the politically correct route, etc., etc. And Rian Johnson destroyed the future of Star Wars, and we have to... There's now a petition or some kind of initiative I saw the other day on Facebook where they want to raise money to reshoot and reboot The Last Jedi, completely refilm it. It's like, okay, whatever. But I think a lot of people still loved those movies. But for Solo, I don't think the lack of success at the box office was just because of the fans not liking the backstory of Han Solo and Lando and Chewbacca. Apparently, there were also a lot of executive decisions that turned this into a box office problem. The first one was that apparently, now of course this is always about rumors, you hardly ever get like formal statements of Disney or Lucasfilm about this, but apparently, according to some sources, the executives, or how'd you say that, the producers, the people in charge of the Star Wars saga, were fed up with all the delays. Keep in mind that there had been problems with Rogue One as well, where the entire second part of the movie had to be reshot and was recomposed in a way. And you still see some traces of the old story and the old version of the movie and the new one. They did a terrific job, but of course it delayed the movie. It caused a lot of headache and probably also cost them a lot. Now with Solo, it was even worse.
they fired the directors. They rewrote the script I don't know how many times. There were tons and tons of problems during that production. And in the end, the new director ended up reshooting more than 70% of the movie, if not more. We'll never know. And so the movie was tremendously over budget. And even though Ron Howard was able to shoot the entire movie still within the time constraints that were given to them, he actually asked for a delay to publish this movie or launch it in December, like the other Star Wars movies. But Disney was like, no, it has to be in May. And like all the old Star Wars movies were also launched in May. And then they had a second problem, and that is that May was also, or June was also scheduled to be the launch of the big Avengers two-part finale, or at least the first episode, the first part of the two-part finale, Infinity War. And they made the decision to put all the marketing effort into Marvel Infinity War. And Solo was not allowed to do any publicity after The Last Jedi. It's something that surprised me. And I was like, well, why didn't we see a trailer before we saw The Last Jedi? That would be the perfect moment to pitch that Solo movie. And they didn't. And then we heard nothing for months. And then all of a sudden we get this one trailer, which was okay, but it even featured some scenes that were cut out of the final version of the movie because, well, the acting was not very good. And so and everything was kind of wonky, and then they had this lawsuit or this copyright claim because these nice retro posters that they put out, they commissioned that from an artist who completely copied the idea from, I think, a French record label or something like that. So they had to redo the artwork. And there were so many really amateurish mistakes in the promotion of this movie. And I think that also played a role. And I think it was a big, big mistake not to go for December and to be in competition with your own movie, Avengers, Infinity War. And then later on, The Incredibles, Incredibles 2 is also taking away a lot of the interest at the box office. If they had launched this in December, I think the movie would have probably grossed twice the amount of what it grosses now. There are some interesting rumors about the third installment of the current trilogy, so the sequel to The Last Jedi, about a character that comes back. I won't spoil it. There's an important character perhaps returning to the franchise, which could also kind of make people more interested in at least checking out the DVD or the Blu-ray or the streaming version of Solo. I will say no more in fear of spoiling, and I think eventually this will be all over the place, but let's play it safe for now. So I think that Disney will make their money back. I mean, this is just a box office, and they make so much money with the merchandising and later on all the other licenses that they give to streaming platforms, or the money that they'll make eventually on their own streaming platform. So don't worry about Disney. And there were also immediately rumors that Disney had halted the production of all these standalone movies. So we know that they're working on the final chapter of the current trilogy. Then Rian Johnson was commissioned a new trilogy, completely different, completely separate from the Skywalker timeline, in a different part of the universe, different, just something new that is still Star Wars. Now, a lot of the haters of The Last Jedi are like, well, why Rian Johnson? My brother was like, well, I think that they're just doing that for PR purposes, kind of to put Rian Johnson away and to kind of send a message, well, Rian Johnson is really important for us, so you have to take The Last Jedi seriously. And my brother totally expects them to cancel that trilogy. Well, I'm not sure about that. And then you've got the two writers for Game of Thrones that are working on a series. We don't know how many movies. That's all we know, but, well, they're pretty high quality, so that's probably going to be very good. You've got TV series, the animated series, and then you've got the live action series with Jon Favreau, who also played the multi-armed alien in Solo, at least the voice. So
there's a lot of Star Wars that we can look forward to, but there were rumors that there would be a standalone movie about Boba Fett, which I don't think is a good idea, because the less you know about Boba Fett, the cooler he is. And there would be a standalone movie about Obi-Wan Kenobi with Ewan McGregor, who is apparently getting back in shape. Well, according to that, those rumors, those were canceled because Disney was like, oh, let's not do this again. Well, if it's just a marketing problem, then I think, and you can bet that they did their analysis and that they know very well why it failed. Then it's not very likely that they will take rash decisions. And according to the latest report that I've read, some more verifiable sources within Lucasfilm have said, no. There are a number of unannounced standalone Star Wars movies that are in development. Don't worry. So whether that's damage control or it's true, I tend to think, you know, why wouldn't they develop standalone movies? Disney is Disney. They have turned Marvel into a massive success. And there are lots and lots of experts there that I think can do the same for Star Wars. But this is just the beginning. They're reestablishing contact with the Star Wars fans, and that's kind of a rocky process. It's like they've grown apart for 20 years, and now this new trust has to be nurtured. And then, well, sometimes that goes wrong, and there were some fans that were not happy with The Last Jedi. I'm pretty sure that they'll do everything they can to win back the hearts of those disgruntled Star Wars fans. And I think that even after this Solo mishap, they will have plenty of other options to forge that bond with the Star Wars fans and turn this franchise into something that is a reliable cash cow for the future. Because that's ultimately, I think, the real force behind Star Wars for Disney. They have made their money back, but they want more. The magic stardust of the dollars. All right, that's it for the movie TV segment. Let's move over to the Peculiar Bunch.
Catholics rock!
Here at the Peculiar Bunch, we're always happy to tell you everything about the Catholic faith and its traditions, but since you were afraid to ask...
Catholics can be a peculiar bunch. No meat on Friday.
No meat? What do they eat, light bulbs?
And from Star Wars, we go to culture wars, because I got a question about that.
Man, you guys got more crazy rules than Blockbuster Video.
So later on in the show, I'll talk a little bit about my first steps in the wonderful world of Instagram TV. IGTV was launched just a couple of days ago, and I've been asking basically my audience on Instagram, what do you want me to talk about? And people can ask questions, suggestions, and so I received a number of comments. One of them was a question about culture wars. And the question was, how do we win the culture wars? Now, I have to be honest and say that that is a term that has always puzzled me. And I think the reason that I don't really get a good grip or good grasp of what culture wars are is because I live in Europe. And this is a term that is used a lot in North America, and both in a political context, also sometimes in a religious context, definitely a cultural context. And it's a term that you barely ever hear in my country and in our European countries. What I'm going to share with you is how I think I should interpret it, but I could be wrong. After all, I am a European. So this is not a very old term. It's something that came up in the 90s, as far as I have been, of course, looking this up on Wikipedia. And of course, the term culture wars tells us something about what that means. It's a war between two cultures or several cultures. And from there, you can deduce, well, it's probably between a culture let's say the question probably comes from a Catholic background. So it's Catholic culture towards something that is not Catholic or anti-Catholic, because it has to be more than different. It has to be opposed for it to cause a war. And on the Wikipedia page, you see that it is mostly used in an American context, in the U.S. Context. It was used mostly in the 90s. Sociologist Hunter in the 90s used it in a publication, Culture Wars, The Struggle to Define America. It was a kind of an analysis of the polarization in American politics and culture. That is something that as Europeans we see. We notice this a lot, especially, of course, in the current political debate in the United States. And I'm pretty sure that if you live in the United States, you also know all about this. There is this massive, massive polarization in the American society. And that polarization is manifesting itself in many different areas, not just in the political area, but also in the religious domain, where it seems that a lot of the mechanisms that you see in the political culture wars, where it's very much also, I think, linked to the two-party system in the United States, where you're either a Democrat or you're a Republican, you're a liberal, you're a Republican, and those two are separate planets, and they are at war. You know, it's the rebels and the empire, and they both think that they are not the empire. The other party is the empire. And there is, of course, the theoretical option of a third party or even multiple parties, but in reality, it always turns into a battle or an opposition between two parties. And because the media landscape is focusing so much on, let's say, the things that sell, let's be honest, the media industry is an industry that wants to buy eyeballs. They want your views, your clicks, the minutes that you're watching, and the advertisements. And so what attracts people nowadays, especially on social media, we know this from all the research that has been done recently about how sometimes certain parties or countries like Russia are using social media mechanisms and technology to influence public opinion. We know that what attracts the most eyeballs and generates the most involvement is controversy, is strife, is battle, it's discord, and you see that mechanism that is used often in the media to sell newspapers. You know, the more controversial things you show, the more angry people are, the more people will watch and will either disagree with you, but it will generate publicity. You know, any publicity is good publicity for some parties, and then you have opposite parties that will cater to the members of the other party, and it's this tendency of always looking for the extremes. Whereas, and in a way, this is very much what you see in the Star Wars controversy as well, where the media kind of presents it as if the Star Wars fandom is split in the middle, and you've got the people that absolutely hate everything that has been done under the direction of Kathleen Kennedy. And then you have the true Star Wars fans. They want the past to be honored. And then you've got the more modern Star Wars fans, those that love all these political items. And they love basically the evolution of Star Wars into another vehicle for Disney to promote their liberal ideas, etc. And it's as if there are literally two camps, whereas in reality, that is not the case. I think the big majority of the Star Wars fans are totally fine with whatever Star Wars they'll get served. And it's not that they are naive. It's just that the middle of the road people, you don't hear them that much, and they're not interesting for the media. Imagine you are a news agency, and you want to write a front page article about the wars of the Star Wars fans. Well, your first quote is not going to be with a John Doe who says, Yeah, I kind of really liked Solo and The Last Jedi. I had some questions about it, but all in all, it was fine and the porks were fun. That's not going to sell you any newspapers. No, you want the guy who says, well, you know, Rian Johnson is the Antichrist and the one, he is the reincarnation of Emperor Palpatine and he is the end of Star Wars is nigh and we have to all turn into Star Trek fans. You want something extreme because that sells newspapers. So I think you have to always be very careful to transpose those mechanisms and that worldview as if there is only you who is part of the good guys and there is the others, the enemy, the people that try to destroy your culture and we have to fight the fight. Kind of if you transpose that mindset on the religious world, it can actually damage, I think, religion itself. Because in reality, of course, the world is not black and white. Just like any person, even your worst enemy, the person that you hate the most in your life, if you would think about his or her perspective, it's never black and white. There are very few people that are pure evil. And most people are gray. They make mistakes. They sometimes they perceive something to be good, whereas, well, you wouldn't agree. You would say that's really evil, but that for that person, he's still looking to do something good, and so you may disagree with the premises of the choices that people make, and then people can change. People can gradually grow towards the faith and can start to embrace things that they may have perceived as something truly evil. There are a lot of people that think the Catholic Church is one of the most evil organizations in the world. They're hypocritical. They have been abusing generation for generations. They're hiding the truth about their own misbehavior. They're exploiting people, taking their money, and telling fairy tales about heaven. Well, if you are from a religious background, most of you will say, that's not really. Yeah, the church makes mistakes, and the ground personnel of God can sometimes do terrible things. But that's not all. That's not all there is to it. There are also many, many people that, from the inspiration that faith gives them. Do so much good in the world and selflessly help other people, give their money to good causes and bring about so much love and forgiveness in the world. That too is also religion. But if you look at someone who is not part of your culture as the enemy that you need to conquer and even coerce into accepting your culture and becoming part of your culture, either my way or the highway, then you can actually stop that reconciliation. You can block that unification, that unity that Jesus prays for. And so it's something to keep in mind when we are confronted with people that tell us, well, we are in a culture war. It's risky to look at the world as if it was a battle of biblical proportions. And even when you look at what the Bible says, you know, in Genesis, when everything goes haywire and there is this opposition between the serpent and mankind, and then later on in the apocalypse, that's reiterated in where this mysterious woman is presented crushing the serpent or the dragon and protecting the child. And a lot of people will read those biblical texts and applying it one-on-one to their current political situation or their current cultural situation where they feel like, well, isn't faith all about the battle against evil? Isn't it all about this spiritual battle, but also a cultural battle that we need to win? Well, I'd caution against that. The first battle that you have to fight takes place in your own heart. It is what Jesus says about the splinter and the big piece of wood, whatever it's called. Probably Inga knows what it is, but no, also just eludes me. But anyway, just first look into your own heart and see what evil is doing in your own heart. The beam and the splinter. Thank you. So there is already so much that is wrong in your own heart. And before you condemn someone else and consider that person to be the enemy, or even entire groups of people, or the political party that you're not part of, to brandish that as the enemy, first look at the inconsistencies in your own life and ask yourself, how can I win the battle in my own soul between good and evil? Because I believe, I truly believe that that is the best way to transform culture. If you want to change the world, start with yourself. It's a cliche, but it's a cliche because it's true. And of course, it's not that I don't think that we should sometimes fight the good fight in our world. And there are vulnerable people that need other people to fight for them and to fight for their rights and to fight for their dignity, to protect frail human life, whether it is the unborn child or people that are on the run because of what's happening in their country and are trying to find refuge. There are so many situations where we do have to fight the good fight. But that's, I think, very different from what sometimes culture war seems to imply as a word, where it's us, the good guys, versus all the rest of the culture that is evil and doomed, and unless they convert, that's the end. I don't think that it's our mission to to consider everyone else as the enemy and to automatically assume that we are the good guys. No, I think the war that we fight is look in the mirror, ask yourself, how can I win this battle in my heart? Where can I find help in that? Can the church, first of all, before it is an army that wants to win over the bad culture, I think, first of all, the church is a home. The kingdom of God, Jesus describes it as a home with many rooms where you come to rest, to depose your burden, to give your burden to Christ, to find healing, to find consolation for your soul. Blessed are the meek, blessed are the poor, blessed are the people that seek peace. And it is in that entrusting yourself to the healing grace of God that you will ultimately win whatever war God wants you to fight. But before you start a war with people that may actually could become your friends, first fight a good war in your own soul. Okay, I've talked enough about this. Hopefully that'll explain the point of view from a European priest on this whole concept of culture wars. And we may bring this up in the future as well. Let's play some games.
The humanoid must not escape.
Time to lighten up a little bit, and what better way to do that than to play some video games? I love video games, and I finally caved in. You know that there was a lot of controversy about Battlefront 2, Star Wars Battlefront 2, because of the loot boxes. This was an amazing Star Wars game, at least from the trailers that I've seen and online gameplay. It looks fantastic, one of the best looking Star Wars game ever made. But major controversy, because you could actually pay to win. You could buy loot boxes that would give you access to exclusive items that would give you the upper hand in the online fights in those multiplayer games. So a lot of people boycotted the game. Ultimately, there was also a lot of political upheaval about the loot boxes, and in some countries, the judges said that this was actually illegal as a form of gambling, and so Electronic Arts had to backpedal, and they removed
initially all the loot boxes. They completely revamped the progression system, so it's no longer dependent on luck or on, you know, a pay-to-win scheme. And they reintroduced loot boxes, but only, or paid loot boxes, but only for cosmetic items, which is the way Fortnite, for instance, makes a lot of money. That was the right decision. But still, there was so much negative publicity about the game that a lot of people hold off. I didn't want to buy the game because of the negative publicity, but also because it was a very expensive game. Well, Origin put it on sale. The sale is over, unfortunately, but it was only $19.99, which is, I think, a third of the original price, or even less. And all the DLC is free. That's something they committed to even before the big controversy. So we'll get, there is a lot of content that's coming up based on the Solo movie. And I was like, okay, it was the last day of the sale. I want to try this out. This looks so much fun, and you get to fly the new Millennium Falcon, the one that was owned by Lando, and that sort of stuff. There were so many cool things for Star Wars fans. $19.99. Yeah, I'll buy it for that. So I hope to explore that game very, very soon. I've also been playing quite a few games in VR on my wonderful Oculus Go. What a great... I never rave that much about technology, but this, for this device, I'll make an exception. It is definitely the best piece of technology that I've bought in a long, long time. It's so much fun. Also, I find the games to be extremely affordable. If you look at the sales page on the Oculus website, they put a game on sale every day. You can pick up a very, very good VR game for just $2.99, $3.99, $1.99. And so, and a lot of those games are amazing. And there is a ton of content that is free. And I want to mention one app that I tried out yesterday. And to me, it is worth the... It makes the Oculus Go worth the purchase. If only for this app. That's how good it is. And it is the virtual visit to the Anne Frank House. It is the best educational virtual reality app that I've seen so far. And it's free. Unbelievable. Well, if... I had never been to the Anne Frank House. Of course, as most children here in the Netherlands, I'd read the Anne Frank diary. I was extremely impressed by that book and by her story. I saw a movie that was based on the diary, which also moved me to tears. And but I'd never visited the Anne Frank House. It's in Amsterdam. It's just one of those houses near the canal. And I knew that was a tourist attraction. I think it was 2 years ago, Cliff Ravenscraft and his family visited Europe, and they did a whirlwind tour of Europe that they ended in my country, in Amsterdam, and they asked me to go with them to the Anne Frank House, and so we stood in line for hours. It was incredible. I had no idea that there was so much interest for that, and apparently that's all year long. So after a couple of years, it felt like years, after a couple of hours, we could finally enter the Anne Frank House. And I remember being a little bit shocked because I expected the Anne Frank House to look the way it looked in Anne Frank's time. And I'd seen the movie where they tried to kind of recreate that house. And instead, everything was painted gray. There was no furniture. There were no illustrations. There were just informational... displays with telling the story of Anne Frank, but you couldn't really imagine. Well, the house is still the house, and you go up the small staircase, and it's all extremely small and tiny, and so you get a good feel. And plus, there's the reality of that, like this is truly where this story happened, but everything else is gone. And apparently, this was on the explicit request of Anne Frank's father, who didn't want the house to turn into a kind of a circus attraction. So he felt that it needed to be sober, and it needed to help the viewer to focus on the story and on what the story can teach us, instead of distracting us with all these little, you know, things, belongings that once were part of Anne Frank's life. So I was a little bit disappointed, and I remember that there were a few photographs in the various rooms, in the upper house, etc., where you could see the house in the state that they put it in when they, I think they were filming a documentary or a movie. So they did, at one point in history, put all the facsimile, probably furniture, back so that the house, and they took photos of that. But that those are just tiny little photos. Well, the VR app that is currently available for free for the Oculus Go will allow you to walk around in Anne Frank's house, and it looks exactly the way it looked when she was still alive. And it is it was a breathless experience. It feels so real. You stand there in front of that. You walk up the stairs. Well, you don't really move in the game. There are points where you click, and then you're transported to that part of the room. That there are multiple point of views inside the room. But once you stand there, you can look around, and it's lit beautifully. There's a little bit of dust in the air, so it feels very real. Even though I think the entire place was recreated in CGI. But it is done so tremendously well. Plus, what really seals the deal is the audio design. You hear the sounds of Amsterdam through the window, and it's directional audio. So if you turn, you hear the sounds of the bell tower coming through the windows. You hear the traffic. There's one point where you hear actually World War II airplanes flying over your head, and I was literally looking up at the ceiling. That's how real it felt. And what it also does, and this is also part of the Anne Frank experience, if you visit the real place, they guide you through the story with quotes from the diary. And so it is a linear trajectory that you do. You can take as long as you want, which is also an advantage over the tourist version where, well, of course, there are so many people that visit that house every day. You can't really stop. And think, well, you can do that in VR. And then you read these quotes, and it's also read in English. There is a voice that reads these quotes. You can look closer at some objects and turn them around in your hand, and you have the little controller where, for instance, you have the diary itself, and you can turn it in your hand. There's no way in the world that you could do that in real life. That is, of course, in a safe or behind glass. But you can in VR. And the story itself leads you also through the story of her life. And the impact was incredible. After a few minutes, I forgot that I was wearing VR goggles. It felt like I was there. And I rarely have that with VR because of the limited graphical abilities of these headsets. But Anne Frank... The Anne Frank app pulls it off, and in an extremely convincing way. So I can't say enough good about this app. And I would say, if you're a teacher, for instance, go get one of those Oculus Go, install this, and let the children experience this. This is the best way to tell the story of what this persecution of the Jews, what it truly meant, and makes it personal and relatable, and shows you what people can do to each other, but also the beauty of what can happen even when you're in prison in a house like that, and you have to be quiet the entire day. And they had to be, because no one could know that they were there. And there, in the game, at one point you're in a room, and then you hear the voice of Anne Frank, well, the person who reads this, and we couldn't say anything during the day. Every sound could give us away. And then all of a sudden you hear clanking sound, and it's like, shh, don't make that noise. That's how real it feels. So you get that, and at the same time you see the beauty of that personal story of that family and all those people that lived there together and try to make the most out of it. It's unbelievable. So if there is one killer app sounds kind of like the wrong term in this context, but if there's one reason I think for VR to become mainstream, it's stuff like this. So go check it out. If you know someone with an Oculus Go, tell them to show you that. You won't regret it. And I think it's also available, by the way, on the Rift and some other VR goggles, perhaps even on the Samsung strap-on goggles. Check it out. And, well, from there, from the Second World War, we pay a quick visit to the world of Star Trek in our sci-fi segment. Because we all love science fiction, don't we? If you don't like the science part of it, you could like the fiction part of it. I like both, especially in combination. That's a lot of music. I think I should have shortened this clip a little bit. Boom!
I see aliens. Little aliens from outer space.
And how are things in outer Plutonia?
How many times have I told you not to wear your space boots in the house?
For the shape I'm in, you could donate my body to science fiction.
Get your suit on! We need ya!
Well, there are some major changes going on behind the scenes of Star Trek Discovery, the CBS series. And for all of the non-American listeners, we can watch that on Netflix. If you live in the United States, you have to get a subscription, online subscription to CBS. But it's good. It's really good. Well, turns out behind the scenes, it's not good at all. Showrunners Aaron Harberts and Gretchen Burke have been fired from the drama's second season and will be replaced by executive producer Alex Kurtzman. And that's good news, because he is behind a lot of good Star Trek stuff. But apparently the reason that these two showrunners were fired was the way they treated the writers. There was like verbal abuse and fits of anger and completely unprofessional behavior. And I think this is the result probably of the changing atmosphere in Hollywood, where abuse, whether it is physical abuse, sexual abuse, verbal abuse, is no longer tolerated. It's over. We have to create work environments where people are safe and where you don't exploit other people. There was another article that I read the other day about Amy Adams. It was, of course, in Superman movies. She plays Lois Lane. She's also the main character of one of my favorite Disney movies ever, Enchanted, where she plays this real-life version of a Disney princess and a very likable person, not just in the roles that she plays, but also in real life. And apparently she was filming on a set, and she had a stunt double or a person that sometimes is used for, I don't know, scenes where she's not available. And this was for a movie, I think, where they both had to wear extensive prosthetics. And they looked alike so much that at one point, some of the people that were shooting footage which did not feature Amy Adams, the actress, but her stunt double, thought that Amy Adams was the stunt double. And so she tells the story that she's like rudely pushed in the direction and given shouted commands at her. And then that's the moment that she realizes, so this is how they behave when I'm not there. And then the people that did that to her realize that she is Amy Adams. She's the actress. And then they're like, oh, sorry, we didn't know it was you. We thought it was your stunt double. And she was like, well, duh. You should treat me the same. You should treat her the same. And she made a point. And again, I wonder if that would have happened 5 years ago. And I think that this is a very, very good development. And I'm glad to hear that it also in Star Trek, the people that are in charge are taking action to prevent this abuse of the writers, which of course are always, that's the invisible part. They're not the heroes. They're not the people that the fans identify with, and oftentimes they don't even get credit. But if Star Trek is a story, it's kind of like a space fairy tale about a world where, you know, humanity has evolved and has learned to from its mistakes, and it's a world with less war and more understanding and more tolerance, then of course you should apply that message to your own working environment. Otherwise, people won't believe your stories. Plus, you won't even be able to tell those stories, because if those values are not important to you in the way you behave, in the way you run the show, how could you convey those values in the stories that you tell? I actually think a lot of the bad stuff that comes out of Hollywood and that we see on TV is often, it's coming from the heart of bad people, or people that have forgotten about the important values in life. I really hope that the movement that has started with the whole Me Too things and the Harvey Weinstein scandals, that will ultimately help Hollywood to make better movies, to tell better stories, that will change the mentality of the people that work in that industry. Because it's when you change the hearts of people, you will change the stories they tell. It will affect the quality of what people do. And the easy cash-ins where they just want to make a lot of money by cramming movies and TV shows with cheap violence or nudity or bad jokes. It's the people that create those stories that are to blame. And it's by healing the workplace environment, I think, that we will also heal storytelling itself for a great deal. So, you know, it's always a bit dramatic when something like that happens, but I hope this will be for the best. And with that, it is time for our next segment. Let's go over to the world of tech and technology.
We are on the cutting edge of technology.
Wow. Well, what does that mean?
Let's plug it in. It's going to say, hey, I see you plugged in a new device. And it's going to load in the appropriate drivers. You'll notice that this scanner build... Whoa.
Well, all your technology stuff, it just ends in disaster.
But there is one more thing.
IGTV. Instagram TV. For once, I caught it when it was hot, when it was brand new. I've always been an early adopter. I've been on Twitter forever. I was, not one of the first YouTubers, but I definitely loved to dabble my feet in the YouTube world a couple of years ago already. And I've been podcasting since the dawn of podcasting. And I'm still kind of amazed that they put me in the Hall of Fame for this year at that podcast conference in Philly in the summertime. But I was at the dawn of that technology, and I always like to examine new opportunities to communicate and to connect with an audience. Oftentimes, I misjudge the potential of technology. Remember Plurk? I converted so many people to Plurk, which was this online website where you could chat with each other, and it was on a time. I even forgot what it looked like. It was just nobody remembers. But at the time, it seemed like, whoa, Plurk, that's the new Twitter. You know, it's like everybody should be on Plurk. Back in time, ICQ, like an instant messenger. And everyone at the university where I studied was using ICQ. And you could, I remember when I was still doing my website with theforce.net, I had like hours and hours of conversation with people in Canada and the East Coast of the United States through ICQ. And I only got the word, the reason for that anagram much, much later. It's like, oh, ICQ, ICQ. I think that it was already extinct at the time when I'm slow. Well, IGTV, Instagram TV. Of course, we know that Instagram, owned by Facebook, they want to take over the world. And they've done that in a very unethical way by just copying what successful other parties did. They first try to buy the company, and then when they can't, they'll just copy it and do it better. That's what happened to Snapchat. Snapchat
was the latest, greatest thing ever. That's where the future is. I remember Cliff Ravenscraft telling all of us, you know, just go on Snapchat. You'll thank me later. And we all did. And I was like, wow, Snapchat, that is something new. That is such a fast way of communicating. And it's awesome. And then these little goofy filters. And yeah, I used Snapchat for quite a while. I even Snapchatted an entire visit to Rome, which now I'm like, why? Because it all disappeared after a day. And the camera was not very good. And oh, man. But then Instagram tried to buy Snapchat, and Snapchat said, no, we're going to be billionaires. Bye-bye, Facebook. And then Facebook was like, well, we've bought Instagram. We'll just turn that into Snapchat. And then they did Snapchat, but they did it better. And then, of course, they were building upon the connections that they could create with the networks that were already on Facebook. So now they are trying to compete with YouTube. YouTube is the holy grail, I think, for Facebook. YouTube is massive. It's a very, very good audience building platform. It's the biggest video provider in the world. And it has tremendous discoverability. It's got all sorts of ways to build that connection to your audience and to make money. So no wonder that all the good video creators are on YouTube. And I think Facebook has been racking its brains over how can we get a piece of that pie. They tried it with Facebook Video. And it's kind of a half-hearted attempt because 90% of the videos you will watch in your timeline are stolen material. They're reposted YouTube videos. They're commercials that are reposted. It's unbelievable how much copyrighted stuff was stolen and put on Facebook. Plus, Facebook search is a disaster. You try to search for whatever video, you will not be able to find it. So most of the video, and we've experienced that with Tridio as well. We posted our Star Wars documentary first few episodes on Facebook, and we got a lot of views. But then you look at the statistics, and it's all autoplay. It's like 90% of the people that watched those videos only watched 10 seconds, and that counts as a view. So you're telling yourself, oh my, look at how many viewers we have. And it's all fake. And Facebook knows that. And they know that they have to come up with something else. And Instagram being such a major hit with the younger generation, and they had a lot of Snapchat refugees because Snapchat made a few stupid mistakes, revamping their user interface, not really communicating that well with their target audience. And then not repenting publicly. That's the stupidest thing you can do. When everybody is angry and say, well, we are right. Yeah, you may be right, but you lose all your customers. It's like the butcher going vegan. It's, yeah, but that's good for animals. Yeah, but it's not very good for you if you want to run a butchery. Anyway, so I'm probably getting hungry. That's why I'm talking about this. So they have come up with a way to take over YouTube, or at least get a piece of the pie that YouTube currently eats, by introducing Instagram TV, or in short, IGTV. You could already, of course, post your short clips, 10 seconds, and then you could chain them into a story. But that still was very much like Snapchat. It's here today, gone tomorrow. Plus, you got to press that record button every 10 seconds. And so if you have a longer story to tell, it became very frustrating. So you got a lot of talking head videos on Instagram where it's... And every time you have to kind of start where you left. With IGTV, you can upload longer videos. Unfortunately, they told us that you could upload 1 hour videos or as long as 1 hour, but apparently for now that is still reserved for the official accounts of celebrities, you know, the one that have the blue seal of approval. And I read up, I was like, how can I get a seal of approval? Well, you can't. It's something that's, it's a very opaque system, and you have to probably try to find a company in the digital world that can make that happen for you.
will probably also be expensive. So, but anyway, you can still post 10-minute videos easily. And what I think is genius what they did is also something that I hate. Vertical video. Instead of trying to come up with a compromise, they embraced it. It's not a bug. It's a feature. Let's go mobile first. And I think it's super smart because they set themselves apart from YouTube. You know, you go to YouTube for long form horizontal video. You go to Instagram TV for vertical video first. This is a platform that is made for mobile. And most people are watching videos on their mobile devices, on their phones. That's where you want to be. And so instead of apologizing kind of half-heartedly, yeah, it is vertical video, but yeah, you can also turn your device around. No, it's like, this is the biggest vertical video platform. And I was like, okay, I can be mad at that and think about the, you know, vertical video is not really how your eyes work. And it's very limited what you can do with vertical video. If you are in the image, you can't see much of the background. But I decided to embrace it and to think about something that I could do specifically for IGTV. So I don't want to do what I did many times before, and I think it was a mistake, trying to take content from one platform and adapt it to this other platform. So I would repost my tweets to Facebook. I would try to recut my YouTube videos for Instagram. And every time I tried to do that, it failed. Instead, I was like, so what can I do on IGTV that I don't do in my podcast, that I don't do in my YouTube vlogs, that I don't do in my Tridio documentaries? And it's like, I'm going to start a conversation. I'm just going to answer questions and have a conversation with my audience. And the cool thing is, because I was already on Instagram, I've got more than 2,000 people that are now also able to watch those IGTV stories. And I still try to film it well, and I'm trying out several things. I used my DSLR camera for the second video, and then the battery was empty, so I used my phone, the front camera of the iPhone 6 Plus, which is really not a very good camera, filmed it in front of the window. And even though, well, perhaps the video is good, but the quality of the video is horrible. So I'm still kind of trying to figure out the technicalities. I want this to look really good, but more importantly, I want this to matter to my audience. I want to be helpful. And so the question that I ask myself is, how can my channel on IGTV help other people? And that's what I want to do. So it may actually turn into something much more pastoral, more priestly than I've done with my previous shows. And I think that's okay, because it's all part of the same Father Roderick, and it serves different audiences. So if you have a question you want to ask me for some advice, well, I'm not sure if I'm the best person to give advice, but I can at least think with you and try to find some answers, then by all means, download that IGTV app or look for the IGTV icon in your Instagram app, because they're rolling it out over the next couple of days, and you'll be able to watch that also, I think, inside your Instagram app. And let me know. Just interact, comment. And if you have any ideas or requests of what I should do with IGTV, then let me know. But for now, I'm on board with the vertical video. And with that, I think it is time to wrap up the show, because we've been talking for about an hour and I don't want to take more of your time. Thank you so much for listening. And we'll see each other on Facebook and on Twitter. I'm Father Roderick, almost everywhere, on YouTube as well. Make sure to also follow our Tridio Media account. It's Tridio Media, Facebook and Twitter. And if you haven't done so already, check out our Star Wars documentary, available for free on youtube.com/Tridio Media. I'll see you next week. Take care and God bless.